the left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, let's get after it. It is Tuesday, March 4th, and this hour of Flames Talk is underway on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Steinberg, Aaron Vickers along with you this hour on Flames Talk from our Groundworks downtown studio. Thanks for being along with us, and we got a good hour ahead for you. Hello, Vic.
Hey, buddy. How's it going?
I'm good. What's
I like
happening
to hear that.
On your end?
I'm just ready to make some radio.
Are you dandy?
I don't have a better adjective than dandy. Let's go with that.
Okay, I like it. All right, so Flames are now two-thirds of the way through their monster season-long six-game road trip, and they are 1-2-1 on this road trip so far as they get set to take on the Philadelphia Flyers on Tuesday night. And for the first time since the January 31st trade between the Flames and the Flyers, these two teams are going to meet, and thus it is the return of Morgan Frost and Joel Farabee to Philadelphia. The deal was made January 31st during a game. And my question to you, Vix, my question on the text line is, how do we feel about this trade just over 1 month later? How do we feel about the deal that the Flames made with Philadelphia that sent Jacob Pelche, Andre Kuzmenko, and a couple picks the other way to bring in Frost and Farabee? How do we feel about it now? And how do we feel about it 10 games into the 10 years of the newest members of the Flames? And that's kind of going to be our first topic this afternoon on Flames Talk. I'm curious as to where you are on the text line. I know where I am on the conversation, but I'm curious as to where you are, Vix.
This is an interesting question because you can answer it a whole lot of ways. So I'm going to start by saying I'm underwhelmed with what I've seen out of Frost and Farabee. It's a 10-game sample now. Collectively, they have a combined 3 goals and 4 points. Mm-hmm. They have not had necessarily the impact I thought. I'm not coming at this as I was an expert on the Philadelphia Flyers, and I could dial in Frost and Farabee, exactly what you're going to get, what you should get, what hasn't worked in Philadelphia, what might work in Calgary. I'm not going to profess to be a Flyers expert. I see them twice a year, once at the Saddle Dome, once in Philadelphia. But I've been underwhelmed with what I've seen out of that Flyers duo. Now, that's one way to answer your question. The second way I would go about it is I still make that deal 10 times out of 10 from a Calgary Flames perspective, because it's allowed, not that we've necessarily seen this to date yet at the 10-game mark of their 10 years with the Flames, but I feel a whole lot better about how the Flames forward slot when you have Farabee and Frost in the lineup as opposed to Kuzmenko and Pelche. So from that perspective, yeah, I wouldn't hesitate to pull the trigger again, knowing that, you know what, 10 games into their careers with the Flames, it's not going to be the prettiest 10 games you've ever seen. And we've seen slivers, we've seen glimpses from both players, I think, in terms of what their potential might be if they can figure it out on a more regular basis. But the inconsistencies from shift to shift, I think, have me hesitating in calling it a slam dunk successful trade to this point. But having said that, yeah, I don't hesitate pulling the trigger. If you gave me this exact same deal again, I'm taking it from a Flames perspective.
That's kind of the main thing for me is that I'm not ready to, well, I'm nowhere close to ready to make a definitive judgment on the trade because, yeah, what is it, 3 points in 10 games for Morgan Frost and 1 point in 10 games for Farabee. So that's 4 combined points.
4 and 20, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, right? Like it has not been an instant fit, and Ryan Huska and this coaching staff are still trying to find the best place for both guys, still trying to find the right line mates specifically for Frost and trying to find the right fit for Farabee. On Tuesday night, he's going to go up in the line again or be on the line with Backlund and Coleman again. So, you know, it's been a real work in progress in terms of trying to figure out exactly how these two guys fit with the team. And it has not been a match made in heaven in the first month of them being with the Flames. But That happens sometimes when you make a trade. That's why a lot of times teams get out in front of it and try to get these deals done prior to the trade deadline, so you have a little more lead time to get guys up to speed. And so I'm kind of where you are. I have not been overwhelmed at all. I've not been overly impressed by what we've seen thus far. And yet I still make that trade with Philadelphia all day, every day, because and with no disrespect to Farabee, I make that trade to bring in Morgan Frost because that's a player this team absolutely needs. That's a positional need this team has. And they needed to shore things up at center. Shore things up at center for this season. But more importantly, Vix, they needed to shore things up organizationally in a position that they are not overly deep in and not overly young and deep in. You know, once you get past Backlund and Kadri, who are both in their mid-30s, what, Kadri's 34, Backlund's 35, going to be 36 here very shortly. Like, that's not long-term center ice depth. Those guys are, you know, at the stage now where they're near the end or nearing the end of their careers. And you've got a couple of other options going forward. They've tried Zeri. You know, there's some, who knows what Luke Meese is going to be, all that type of stuff. But they don't really have a ton of long-term options down the middle. And you bring in Frost, who's a 25-year-old player that can slot right in and be this team's number three center right away, but also has the potential to help this team long-term and has absolutely helped them immediately in the face-off dot, which is an area they've struggled mightily in. Yeah, I'd still make this trade, and I don't think the Flames shouldn't have made the trade just because of how it's gone through the first 10 games. And the other thing that I think is really important, Vix, is I do think, and you can call this me making excuses all you want, but I do think both Frost and Farabee have a little bit of a Tortorella hangover, and I do think both guys, there are some lingering scars left over from how the first half and a bit went with Tortorella, because look, Torts is a hard guy to play for, and when you get in Torts' doghouse, it can be a difficult thing to get out of. I think that can mess with a young player's confidence. I think that can mess with getting your game back on track when it maybe gets off track playing for Tortorella. So I think it's going to take some time to just rehab the confidence levels of both these guys because of how this season went with John Tortorella. That's not criticizing him. He's a hard coach to play for. He always has been. But I do think that there's a little bit of that going on, too, as well.
Well, there's that. But let's not forget the life perspective of this, too. These are two players that have been uprooted from the only NHL organization they've known mid-season, mid-game, and ushered up to Calgary. That can be a lot to take in, especially as a young player. Like, we know the struggles that Jonathan Huberdeau and Mackenzie Weegar had, and that was an off-season deal. Weegar sorted it out halfway through his first season. Yep. It's taken Jonathan Huberdeau a little bit longer, but I think he's turned a bit of a corner. I think that's fair to say when you lead the team in goals and points. But you got to take that in consideration, too. Yes, they make millions. That doesn't excuse the fact that they're human beings. They're not robots. And you touched on Frost a fair bit, and I agree with a lot of what you said there. So I'm going to pivot a little bit to Farabee as well, and I understand the situation. The expectations aren't necessarily the same. He's having a down year by his standards. He was a $5 million, I don't want to say he was a throw-in in this deal, but there was a reason Philadelphia Flyers were willing to unload him. But you go back to the 2020-21 season, he had 38 points in 52 games. That is a 56-point pace. Year after, 44. Year after that, 39. Last year, he had 22 goals and 50 points in 82 games.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that he's only got one goal in 10 games and he's on pace for 27 points over an 82-game schedule, like, it's a down year for him across the board. You want to talk torts, you want to talk trade. Regardless, before that move, he was struggling, and there's a reason he was available from the Flyers.
Yeah.
I still think that there's a player there, and in sort of the same ways I see it in Frost, two or three shifts a game, five-on-five shifts per game, because I think on the power play, he's much more noticeable. But similar in that sense, not necessarily from the high-end skill point, but you see things out of Farabee that start to click and you go, okay, I can see how he was a 50-point guy in the NHL. Again, it's not carrying the puck from your own end through the neutral zone, beating a defenseman with some slick hands and driving the net. There's just some sort of subtleties, I guess, in his game that make you go, okay, this guy can be an effective middle six winger, maybe a third line winger if he can put things back together. So to circle back, these 10 games, not the result you want from a Flames perspective whatsoever, but there's no way I hesitate in making the deal again.
And I do think that Frost was the main kind of pivot point of this deal from a Flames standpoint.
I don't think they go out and make a Farabee trade.
But I also think, you know, when talking about that, I also think that Farabee's the guy that maybe has the larger torts hangover compared to Frost. And I think, you know, I've heard this from a few different people that it might take a little bit more time. You know, you never make excuses, and I get all that. Oh, stop giving them what the pro athletes are. Whatever. They're still humans, and it didn't go very well in Philadelphia this year. And Farabee got in the doghouse. And I think that getting in that doghouse messed with his confidence a little bit. And as a result, I think it's going to take a little bit of time for that confidence to get built back. And so for me, Vix, I'm not ready to make a definitive judgment on Frost, Farabee, for Pelche, Kuzmenko, and picks until we get to, you know, next season. I'm going to let this, obviously all we can do is run out this season and see how it goes. And maybe they make the playoffs and see how it goes there. But in terms of making a definitive call, I'm not quite ready to do that until we're into next season, because I do think it's going to take some time for the building back of confidence on both guys and getting comfortable on both guys' sides. And this deal wasn't just made for this season, Vix, which is why I think I can be okay with waiting until sometime next season to get a little bit of a better all-around perspective on what this deal looks like.
Yeah, this was most definitely a long-term play. I mean, both players are 25 years old. You're not just bringing them in for a stretch run and hoping that they can bolster your top nine in order to make a push for the Stanley Cup playoffs. And confident, I'm glad you mentioned the confidence thing sort of in relation to Torts, but even if it wasn't Tortorella, if it was any other coach and you're having an off year, confidence is such a fickle thing, whether you're a hockey player, whether you're a co-host on Flames Talk, whether you're any other line of work in the world. And when you're not feeling it and you feel down day in, day out about the performance you're putting forth, it's not a light switch that flicks on, regardless of if you change companies, if you change teams, it's not a light switch that flicks and suddenly you're the most confident player, confident worker in the world again. It takes some time to build back up, whether that's going to be 10 games, whether that's going to be 20 games, whether that's going to require an off season or a summer, we don't know yet. But the fact that you can see these slivers or these glimmers of potential, different types of potential for Frost and Farabee, but potential nonetheless, it's promising, but you've got to deliver it on a more regular basis.
And they I think they would be the first to tell you that they need to deliver a little bit more too. So we'll and text lines open. Your thoughts on this, you know, how do you feel about the trade for Frost and Farabee? Biggest trade the Flames have made in quite some time. Well, biggest trade the Flames have made since the Markstrom trade. But the biggest trade the Flames have made this season.
Yeah.
How do you feel about it now? And it's only been a little more than a month. It's only been 10 games. But your thoughts at 960-960. Let's hear from both guys. They spoke Tuesday morning in Philadelphia ahead of their return on Tuesday night. Let's start with Morgan Frost. He talked a little bit about returning to his old stomping grounds.
It was weird. Coming in yesterday, like I still have my car here, so I was... Went out and did some stuff yesterday, just like driving around. It definitely felt weird, but I think probably once the game starts, it'll feel like a normal game. But maybe in the pregame and seeing some of the guys in the warmups might be a little weird for sure.
What was maybe your favorite memory here?
Oh man, picking out a game, I think that the stadium series that we played, that was really cool. I remember that forever. It's hard to pinpoint a memory. I think we had it's pretty well known. We had a you know, tight group of guys, and we did a lot of fun stuff together. So I don't know if I got one to pinpoint. Maybe if you gave me some more time, I could probably think of a better answer for you. But just all the times, spending time with the guys.
Morgan, not to make you relive the trade, but can you maybe just take us through how you found out? Because that was right after a game. It was just kind of chaotic.
Yeah, well, that was the game that I was having some vision problems, or I don't know what was happening. I had a migraine, so yeah. I actually was at home, and then I got the call. So that was it's weird how it happened like that. It was definitely different. I know Beezer was still at the rink, so he got to, you know, kind of see some of the guys and say bye. And I was at home with the lights off. My head was hurting a bit. So it was, then I found that out. So it was a bit of a whirlwind, but yeah, Danny called me. He had nice things to say, and they did so much for me, and they were great for me.
There you go. That's Morgan Frost on his return as he comes back to Philadelphia Tuesday night. And here's his bud, Joel Farabee, who, of course, was traded that same day.
So it was definitely strange. You know, obviously the game ended, and, you know, everyone checks their phone right after the game. So everyone kind of knew something was going on. And then Danny B just grabbed me quick and was just like, yeah, we're moving you and Morgan to Calgary. And definitely sucked because, you know, obviously we had to fly out the next day, so you didn't really get much time to say goodbye or anything like that. But I think a bunch of us went over Tip's house after and just kind of had a couple drinks, talked about memories and things like that. So it was good. And, you know, obviously getting to see the guys yesterday was good too. So definitely sucked. But, you know, at the same time, it's been awesome in Calgary. And the team here has been great, and the guys have been awesome to us. And, you know, we're having a blast. So it's been fun.
What was maybe your favorite memory in Philadelphia, if you could pinpoint one?
There's so many. I think definitely a cool game that I always think about was Giroux's 1,000th game. I think I scored the game winner in that game too. So I have a big frame picture of the team from that game, and that's something I always remember. I think that year we weren't very good, but I think that was the best crowd I ever played in front of was that game. So if you gave me more time, I could probably think of a bunch of other memories, but that's one that just came to mind.
That is Joel Farabee on his return to Philadelphia. Obviously, both guys have never played for another organization. On the other side was a first ever trade for Pelche, second trade for Kuzmenko, and he had to waive to go to Philadelphia. So that's the second time. Right around, I believe, both times Kuzmenko has been traded, it's been on January 31st.
Yes, it has.
Yeah. Got traded to Calgary on January 31st, 2023, and then gets traded to Philadelphia from Calgary on January 31st, 2025. Sorry, you know how I am with dates and numbers. 24, 25, both on January 31st, Kuzmenko gets dealt. Any last words? Any last thoughts for you before we hit the text line?
I mean, when you look at what the Flames sacrificed in order to bring these two players in, you mentioned Kuzmenko, you mentioned Pelche, second-round pick, a seventh-round pick in 2099. To me, it's a low-risk, high-reward type deal. And again, I would do it 10 times out of 10. The only part that probably, or the part that probably stings me the most from a Flames perspective, from a media perspective, is seeing Jacob Pelche go the other way, because I really, and that's a sentimental sort of reason. I don't necessarily know what his future holds in the NHL, but you're sacrificing a pending unrestricted free agent, a player that you potentially could have lost for free at the beginning of the season on waivers, a second round pick, and then another late round pick. The Pelche one might be just personal and sentimental because he was such a personality in the room and on the bench and on the ice. So you, not that you don't wish Kuzmenko well, but you really wish Jacob Pelche well from my perspective. But again, that's a trade I make 10 times out of 10.
And we'll discuss the Pelche and Kuzmenko angle a little bit later on here on the Daily Flames Roundtable this hour. Let's get to the text line at 960-960. Derek says, would you rather have Frost and Farabee or Trent Frederick? The Flames deal is much better at basically the same cost. I think they're different trades, first of all. I mean, Frederick fills a very specific need on whatever team he plays for. Frederick's kind of got similar offensive career numbers as Frost. Left shot center himself. I think that they're kind of, you know, a little older on Frederick's side of things, but I think maybe fits what the Oilers are looking for as a number three center a little more than Frost might. He's a pain in the ass to play against, and he brings some edge and physicality and all that type of stuff. But, I mean, it is kind of a similar trade. Frederick definitely was going to cost a little bit more because he is a pending UFA and is a guy that had turned into one of those commodities out there at deadline time.
Yeah, to me, these are two very different trades made by teams in two very different situations where the Edmonton Oilers are looking to add to their playoff push, whereas the Flames are, this deal helps them now, but it also helps them in the future. To me, they're very distinct and different incentives behind the decision to make each move. So I don't really lump them together regardless of the return.
This says from Matt, I think it's way too early to grade this trade. There's still a ton of upside with Frosby. We'll have a much better idea on both of them next year, which is kind of where both you and I are at this stage of the game. Jeff writes, bringing in Frost and Farabee fits the Flames' future model, younger and faster with what the Flames have in the next 3 to 5 years for prospects and picks. This team's going to be a lot better with when the new building opens. Torts and Sutter both have similar coaching styles. Younger players would have an opportunity, but one or two mistakes and you're in the press box. Huska and company have given the younger players a longer leash to learn and adapt to their game. And that is absolutely what both Frost and Farabee do is fit the idea of younger NHLers, right? That's always been something that Craig Conroy has had as part of his MO, always has had and part of, in is kind of in part of the plan here to build the team back to contention. So they both fit that age range fairly well with a good chunk of NHL action under their belt already.
Yeah, I can't disagree with anything you said there. You hope that the two players that you've acquired can refine some sort of the touch that they've had earlier in their careers or the potential that you think they have in the case of Frost specifically. But again, at the acquisition cost, even if it doesn't work, that's why I kind of call it a little bit of a low risk. Because even if you want to go, well, they shouldn't be moving draft capital. Well, one's a seventh round pick. And yes, Dustin Wolf was a seventh round pick. But your odds of hitting on a seventh round pick are in the single digits. And even a second round pick, you're looking at somewhere between getting, you know, if you want to use 100 games as the benchmark, it's somewhere between 20 and 30% of second round picks even get that far. So you're turning draft capital into much more known quantities that are guaranteed to contribute on a certain level. We don't necessarily know what level yet, but at a level in the NHL.
This reads, absolutely love the trade. They were going to lose Kuzmenko for nothing, and they gave Jacob plenty of opportunity. It's going to take time, but I think these guys will mesh well. This says, it's easy to say that Farabee and Frost aren't scoring, but nobody's really scoring. So yeah, I think we wait till next year and see what we think of the trade. And that's also very true.
What's fun, this is not correlation equals causation, but prior to the trade, the Calgary Flames were averaging 2.68 goals per game. They're down to 1.8 post-trade. Correlation does not equal causation.
I don't think that's just on them.
No, and that's why I've said that phrase a couple times now, but it's just funny how it works sometimes. And to reinforce the texter's message there.
This reads, I like the trade. Give it time, people. Kuzmenko was a non-factor, and the Flames got two guys at the right age who helped their depth and slotting. That's from Wedley in Bridalwood. Kevin and Carstairs voiced the text, so I'll try to work through this. I love this trade. They may not be getting offensive output, but I think that has a lot to do with the system that's in place because a lot of players in Calgary aren't getting the offensive output, and it can't be everybody. That's the issue number two I see. The faceoffs have been better. Defensive play has been better. Two-way play is definitely improvement. I think there needs to be some tweaks in the offensive style of play as a whole, but this trade, I think, was a direct win for the team. Yeah, it's Kevin says, sorry, guys, voice to text sucks, but actually did pretty well, all things considered. What else we got here at 960-960? Frost and Farabee are another typical rearranging of the deck chairs on a sinking ship from a franchise that's only been past the second round of the playoffs once in 36 years. But hey, make sure you don't miss a chance to criticize the Oilers' move. That comes from Jared in Auburn Bay. We weren't criticizing the Oilers' move. There was a text who did that. I actually think it's quite I quite like that trade from Edmonton's standpoint. I think it's exactly what they need is a little bit of grit and depth. So when I saw that trade, I was like, oh, unfortunately, I don't like that for unfortunately, I do like that for Edmonton because, you know, we don't want Edmonton to be good. And I think that was actually a really good trade for the Oilers. So, Jared, that's not us dumping on the Oilers.
Well, and on the shuffling of deck chairs, I don't necessarily see it the same way. Had Frost and Farabee been in their early 30s, I would suggest that, okay, maybe you're cycling in and out pieces, hoping that they might strike gold here. But Frost and Farabee fit the age range, fit the dynamic that Craig Conroy is trying to build this team with. And again, I think there's a lot more runway left in their games than if you were acquiring a 31-year-old that's on pace for 25 points.
This says, you guys are the biggest homers. Both guys underachieved in Philadelphia for over 5 years, and now they're doing the same thing in Calgary. Report it like you see it. Well, that's not quite true.
Well, I mean,
Farabee just had a career season. Frost is very, like, I don't know what, this year they're underachieving.
Yes.
But not for 5 years.
Well, so, and
that's just wrong.
We've been the first to admit that their 10 years with the Calgary Flames has not been a home run, but even in talking about Farabee, because I'll go back to him, like you mentioned, he's coming off a career year. He's historically been between a 44 and 56 point pace over the course of the last four seasons in the NHL. If he can get back to that, how are you not calling that a win from a Flames perspective?
No, we're homers. This from Spencer. I'm still happy with the trade. Sad about Pelts going, but I think the top nine looks so much more solid now. Frost especially is a good add. I'm definitely okay giving them a pretty long leash for the next while, hoping to see more consistency. This, another Matt, I just hope it wasn't the start of another era of trading futures for quick boosts, which I don't think is what it was. And finally, it's early to tell about Frost and Farabee, but they're older young guys, so there's a lot less runway for the road to potential before they turn into what they are, but they didn't give up much, so it's a good deal, but it's not a huge change of projection for this team, which I think is fair. I don't think that their acquisitions massively changed the trajectory of the Flames, but I do think it made them slightly deeper, and it brought in a couple of guys in their age range.
Well, and in theory, you need incremental gains. And if those two players, again, are able to find either past performance, or in Frost's case, I think there's more of a ceiling there to find his game and be a middle six center in terms of production, in terms of everything that you can get. If you can get them back to those points or get them on that pace, then it's the progress you mean. Not every step is going to be a long jump. Sometimes you need to take baby steps in improving your roster. And I think that these players can do that for the Flames.
Okay, great stuff to kick off the hour on Flames Talk. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg, and we're coming at you on Flames Talk from the Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, time now for a Tuesday edition of your Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary Airport. It's Pat Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, and now Derek Wills joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. You know, Willsy, we, in the first half of this hour, talked a lot about the Morgan Frost, Joel Farabee, Philadelphia trade. We talked about it from a Flames standpoint. We talked about it in terms of what the Flames have gotten so far from Frost and Farabee. And we've talked a lot about, you know, what that could look like in the future. And both Vix and I agreed that even though it's only 4 points combined in 10 games for the two newest members of the team, that we'd both make that deal and would do it again 10 times out of 10. So let's now look at it from the other side in terms of the players that left. How do we look back at Jacob Pelche's time as a member of the Flames and to a lesser extent, because it was only exactly 1 year, but how do we look back at Andrei Kuzmenko's one calendar year as a member of the Flames?
Well, I'll start with Jacob Pelche. And to be honest, and this might sound strange to some, when I think about Jacob Pelche, I think about the person before I think about the player. And generally with what we do, that's not the case. But, you know, Jacob Pelche, the person, is as fine a human being as you'll meet in the National Hockey League. And I just will always remember his smile and how much energy he brought to the ice and to the bench and to the dressing room and to everybody who was around him. And I think the Flames have missed that. I think Jonathan Huberdeau misses that. As far as the player is concerned, you know, 26th overall pick of the Flames back in 2019, right before the pandemic. And I do wonder how much the pandemic potentially hurt his development. I know that injuries certainly set him back, but, you know, he was fairly productive. 7 goals and 20 points in 45 career games with the Flames, but not really sure what he was at the NHL level. And I think, you know, Jacob might be trying to figure out who he is at the NHL level. When you're picked in the first round, I think automatically people assume you're going to be a top six player. well, he wasn't that, at least not consistently. I'm not sure he's a bottom six guy. He's probably a middle six guy. Maybe he turns into an energy guy who plays on a team's fourth line, but I think he's probably still trying to figure that out. As far as the other guy goes, Andre Kuzmenko, I mean, it was a wild ride, wasn't it? You look at his three seasons in the NHL, he comes in with 39 goals and 74 points in 81 games with the Canucks, and then falls off to 22 goals and 46 points in 72 games with the Canucks and the Flames last season. This season, not so good. He's got, what, 5 goals and 18 points in 42 games, so it's been a struggle for him, both with the Flames and the Flyers. Different than Jacob Pelche, but a big personality. Andre Kuzmenko, really quirky, very interesting to interview, that's for sure. And he brought a certain energy to the team as well. So, you know, I look fondly at their time as people with the organization. As players, I would say that they both left something to be desired, which is why they were traded. And I guess why in Pelche's case, he was put on waivers to start the season.
Wilsey, you touched on the personality element, so I don't know if I necessarily need to follow up on it other than to say they're two of the biggest personalities in different ways that the Flames have had over the course of the last half decade or so. For me, a similar word I can use for both is frustrating, and stick with me on this, because in the case of Jacob Pelche, you mentioned COVID. I'll toss in the injury troubles that he had last season, which really sort of derailed the potential that I think he had. And so in that sense, you can be frustrated, not with the player itself, but the circumstance and what happened to him. And then when you switch over to Kuzmenko, frustrating from just the fact that enigmatic is probably the way I would just describe him from an on-ice perspective, where he joins the Flames and struggles right out of the gates, has a little bit of a reset, and then comes back and is tied for fourth in NHL scoring from March 28th onward. It's an 11-game sample size, 9 goals, 8 assists for 17 points. Only Kucherov, Crosby, and Panarin had more. So that speaks to what he can deliver over short stints. But then you get back to this season, and the struggles that he had were very well documented, both on this program and basically anywhere around Flame circles. So frustrating, massive personalities, maybe some untapped potential for both. That's how I look back on Pelche and Kuzmenko.
Yeah, guys, I do wonder what happens if that play against Seattle in an early preseason game in 2023 doesn't happen. Was it Marian Studenich of the Kraken who went to deliver a hit on Jacob Pelche? Kind of turned out to be, it ended up being a hit that took Pelche into the boards and separated his shoulder or dislocated his shoulder, needed surgery, and that knocked 6 months off a very, very important time in his career.
Development year,
like,
yeah.
Because Wilsey, I remember talking with you as that year was going on, the 22-23 season, which, as we know, was just such a nightmare year for the Flames. But one of the real positives going down the stretch that year was them bringing Pelche in. And we all remember the what number was he thing with Darryl. But, you know, Jacob Pelche, in his first NHL stint, added a lot of energy and a lot of pop to this roster, into the lineup. And, you know, as the team was tooth and nail fighting to avoid elimination in the playoffs in the final 12-13 games, Darryl decided not to play Pelche. And I remember many times talking with you, Wilsey, and you would make the case that, like, isn't, like, for a team that is having trouble starting games well, and for a team that looks listless a lot of the times, like, wouldn't the energy that Pelche brings to the roster be something you want? And I guess I came away from that first stint in the NHL from Jacob feeling really positive, and I felt like there was a lot to build on going into what we all thought was going to be his first full season in 23-24, and then it gets derailed. And honestly, it's just never been the same since, and it never really got rectified the rest of that year. He came up, got hurt again, then finished in the American League. This year had a really lackluster training camp. His confidence was clearly in the not where it needs to be category, and got put on waivers, which just messed with the confidence that much more. Finally got his NHL recall and played well, but Willsey, I just never felt like Pelche got back to the guy that he was in that first season. And then Kuzmenko, honestly, I come away from Kuzmenko's time saying he was as advertised. He came here with the rap of being an inconsistent, enigmatic guy, and when Kuzmenko was on, he was really fun to watch. And when Kuzmenko was off, he was as frustrating a player as you'd ever see. And there were too many times when he was off compared to when he was on. It was January 31, 2024 to January 31, 2025, and he played exactly 365 days, or was a member of the Flames for exactly 365 days, and the entire time he was as advertised in terms of what we thought he was going to be. But Pelche's the one that you just wonder where it could have been, where it could have gone if that injury doesn't happen in September 2023.
Yeah, and frustration is probably the best word to describe both guys, but in different ways. I felt frustrated for Jacob Pelche. I felt frustrated with Andre Kuzmenko, because Pelche just couldn't seem to catch a break between the pandemic and the injuries. And, you know, Daryl Sutter did a lot of really good things as head coach of the Flames. To this day, I still don't understand what the point of that rant was following Pelche's NHL debut, but... topic for another day. Good kid. Family flew into town, got in, I think, around 3 o'clock in the morning, and he played a pretty good hockey game. Anyways, but with Kuzmenko, as far as raw talent, I think one of the most talented players that I've watched in my 11 seasons calling Flames games. You know, the way he could shoot the puck, his edges, just a fantastic skill set. So, and I felt frustrated watching him because I knew there was way more there and you just didn't see it consistently enough. So it feels like the Flyers are trying to showcase him, maybe trying to flip him before the NHL's trade deadline. Pelche could be more of a project. Jacob Pelche and Daniel Briere, I think, I'm not comparing Pelche to Briere because he had a great NHL career, but, you know, undersized guys with good skill sets. So maybe the general manager of the Flyers thinks there's more there, and just staying healthy and a bit more time to develop will help turn him into an NHL regular. So we'll see, but I do wish both guys the best.
It is our Daily Flames Roundtable. He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg on this Flames Talk edition of this Tuesday. Guys, it was interesting to see Willsey's tweet on Tuesday morning with the lineup, and I don't think we were surprised to see Sharon Govich come back in. I don't think we were surprised to see Pahal come back in. I do think we were all surprised to see where Connor Zeri was slotted in that lineup tweet, Willsey, where he's on the right side of a line with Ryan Lomberg on the left and Kevin Rooney at center. So that is a fourth line slotting for Connor Zeri. I guess just our reaction to that, but maybe more so, how have we felt about Zeri's work in the 15-plus periods he's played since returning to the lineup?
You know what I wasn't surprised by?
The reaction?
The reaction to my tweet.
Yeah, I wasn't either.
Not at all. As a matter of fact, I said to Megan Mickelson, as I was tweeting the lines and the pairings this morning, well, I can't wait to see my mentions. Actually, I can wait to see my mentions. And I took a look at some of them and then decided to close X, at least for the time being. But not surprising. I mean, I knew Flames fans were going to be up in arms about Connor Zeri starting this game on the fourth line. And I think it's important to point out that that's where he is starting this game. It does not mean that's where he will finish this game. As a matter of fact, guys, I'd be somewhat surprised if that's where Connor Zeri finished this game. And I do still expect to see him on one of the Flames power play units, probably their second unit in this game against the Flyers. The truth is, and maybe some don't see it the same way, but I've watched him play every game since he's come back. And I've watched him at every practice and morning skate since he's returned. And I thought he certainly was flying out there at practice prior to playing in his first game after missing 15, but he hasn't looked like the same player in game that he did before the injury. He hasn't looked as explosive. He hasn't looked as dynamic. I think he's still probably trying to get back up to speed. It's tough to hit the ground running when you miss 15 games. And then on top of that, you know, he was probably pretty close to being ready to return before the Four Nations break, didn't, had to wait until after, but that's adding two more weeks on to things. So not easy for Connor Zeri to get back up to speed. And the league gets faster and faster as the season goes. And I think it really takes another step as you get into the final stretch run. And that's where we're at right now. So, you know, Connor Zeri, I think, could use a goal or at least a point to get the monkey off his back. Because for me, fellas, he was as dynamic offensively for the Flames as any player in the team prior to the injury. And he just hasn't looked like that guy since coming back. So he's trying to find himself, and hopefully starting this game on the fourth line and maybe working his way up into the top nine will help him do that.
Yeah, this isn't shocking for me. Don't get me wrong. I raised an eyebrow when I saw your tweet, Wilsey, but this isn't entirely unprecedented when it comes to Connor Zeri. When he returned from injury last spring, he ended up in the press box as a healthy scratch. He missed 8 games with an upper body injury sustained March 2nd, 2024. He had 1 assist in 6 games in his return. He's sitting at 0 points in 5 games as it stands right now. That earned him a healthy scratch on April 4th, and he rebounded for 2 goals and 3 points in the final 6 games to finish the season. Now, he missed 15 games this time with the injury he sustained on January 7th. Again, 0 points in 5 games, minus 3 in that stretch, 8 shots on goals, but 3 of those 5 games he had 1 or fewer. Again, I agree with you, Wilsey. I don't think he looked near as dynamic post-injury as he did pre-injury. And just knowing what happened last season with him coming back and starting slow off of injury, again, I raised eyebrows, I'm not going to lie, but it isn't 100% shocking to me just seeing how he's responded to injury in the past.
I've liked him at times. I've liked him. I haven't noticed him as much at other times. I thought, like, for instance, there were 2 skaters that I liked in the Florida game. He was one of them, and Martin Pospisil was the other. However, I didn't see him much at all in the Carolina game. And I think it's probably safe to say it's kind of been up and down for him since returning. And I don't really think that that's a massive surprise, but I was a little surprised to see him there. And I know that Ryan Huska was asked on Tuesday morning about, like, what's the message to Connor Zeri being put on the fourth line. And Ryan Huska essentially said no real message. But, you know, we just want to continue to see him getting back to the guy he was before. And, you know, we'll see how we rotate him through, to your point, Wilsey, about it not being something that lasts the entire game. So I think that he's shown some flashes of his old self, but hasn't been super consistent either. You know, when he's been out there, team has been outscored 2-0 at 5-on-5. They've been outpossessed fairly significantly. Expected goals are low. The line's been bleeding high danger chances when he's been out there. It has not been great, but I still think it's a work in progress. And I think I'm with you guys. I'm confident Zeri will get back there, and I'm kind of on the same page as you, Derek. Like, I'm not expecting this to be a long term fourth line assignment for him.
And he's not the first player who has played on both the second line or the third line and then been demoted to the fourth line to try to find his game. It has happened with a bunch of guys. As a matter of fact, you know, we just talked about Andre Kuzmenko and Jacob Pelche. There are 2 other guys who played top 9 roles and at times found themselves playing on the wing on the fourth line. And, you know, they'd get off to a good start in the game and would quickly find themselves back in the top 9. So, you know, if Connor Zeri can find his game again, and I think it's just a matter of time. He just needs a bit of time and a bit of runway to get back up to speed here, trying to hit the ground running again after missing 15 games and then 2 more weeks on top of that for the Four Nations break. Not easy for any player. I think especially for a player coming off of a knee injury where probably wasn't able to do the type of work that he wanted during that entire rehab process. So I think he'll get there, and we'll see after starting this game on the fourth line if he finishes it there or is able to find his way up into the top 9. I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, 4 down, 2 to go on this monster 6-game road trip in just a few days from the trade deadline, which is something I'm sure that we'll be hitting on as we move closer to Friday as well here on the Daily Flames Roundtable. For now, have a wonderful rest of your Tuesday. Thank you, Wilsey.
Yeah, Flames need a win tonight. We'll see if they can get it. Enjoy the game, guys.
He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour. Thanks to Azam Ali Nanji and Cam Hughes, our outstanding producers this hour. And that'll wrap us up on our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary Airport.